for everybody. This is the Shiva Sami lecture by Professor Kumar, who's going to speak of on the 20th century Sanskrit commentaries on the Vaisheshika Sutras and continuing her exposition of her work. So over to you.
Thank you. So we'll begin with the Vedic invocation as usual. Om Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunuyam Devah Bhadram Pashye Makshabhiryajatraha Sthirai Rangai Stushtuvan Sastanu Bhirvyashemahi Devahitam Yadayuhu Om Shantihi Shantihi Shantihi. We have prayed for listening to noble words and seeing the noble objects, and may we live our life to the fullest extent with healthy bodies and all the organs functioning properly. So this is my lecture title, has already been explained, and the names of the five commentaries are given there. In this paper I propose to introduce and expound some salient features of the five Sanskrit commentaries on Vaisheshika Sutras written in the last century, that is 20th century. I have already introduced this Vaisheshika system of Kanada, and some of its concept we have already discussed, like dharma and shabda, consciousness and cognition. But today's lecture will be focusing on some facts and informations rather than concepts. As we all know, the Vaisheshika Sutras of Kanada are the first and the foremost textual material available for a study of this system. Although the period of Vaisheshika Sutras cannot be exactly ascertained, yet one can roughly place these around 500 BC and not later than 1st century BC. Accordingly, the history of Vaisheshika system extends up to the last 2,500 years. In this vast span of time, several significant writings, classical as well as modern, have enriched the school by explicating and developing its theories. But there is no doubt about the fact that the sutras of Kanada are the starting point for the system. The sutras, however, must have undergone considerable modifications before the final redaction was done, since there are significant variations in the number as well as nature of sutras in different editions available today. It has also been suggested by some of the scholars that many of these sutras were interpolated in later times, but this does not in any way undermine the significance or the value of its contents. There is no doubt about the fact that just as one cannot study Sanskrit grammar without the sutras of Panini, or the philosophy of Vedanta without the Brahma Sutras of Vyasa, similarly, a study of Vaisheshika is also not possible without the sutras of Kanada. It is precisely due to this reason that there is a growing interest in the ancient texts of this philosophical tradition of India. The oldest available exponent of Vaisheshika Sutras is undoubtedly Prashastapada. But as Matilal has shown in his book, there was a dark period between Kanada and Prashastapada, because Kanada we have roughly placed at 400 or 500 BC and Prashastapada comes up to the 4th or 5th century AD. So between this span of 1000 years, we have references to many of the commentaries on Vaisheshika Sutras, but these are not available. For example, we have the Sutra of Kanada, and we have references of a commentary known as Vakya, which is not available, but we find references to this in many of the Jaina, Buddhist, or even Nyaya Vaisheshika work, also in Sanskrit literature. Then we hear of a Bhashya. And in some of the Sanskrit and Jaina works, it is ascribed to Ravana. In one of the Sanskrit plays by Murari Mishra, it's Anargha Raghava. It is said that it's a Ravana Bhashya, and Ravana was a well-versed scholar in Vaisheshika system and its commentary known as Katandi. The third one is Katandi. So So these are the ancient commentaries we hear of, but none of them is available. And then comes the first available commentary on sutras of Kanada is Prashastapada. And as it has been proclaimed in Sanskrit, Kanadam Paniniyam Cha Sarva Shastropakarakam. One cannot study any of the Shastras of Indian tradition without Panini's grammar or without the Vaisheshika Sutras of Kanada. So on the one hand, there is so much value and significance of the text. On the other hand, we don't find any of the extant commentaries available on this text during the period of 1,000 years after they were finally redacted. So this is a very strange fact. And after that, even up to the present times, 1950s, there was only one single commentary by Shankara Mishra, that is Upaskara, written in 15th century. Upaskara of Shankara Mishra, which was written in 15th century. Actually, Shankara Mishra's Upaskara is the first Bhashya of Vaisheshika Sutras, because technically Prashastapada's Padartha Dharma Sangraha is not a Bhashya. These are all technical terms, Lakshanas of which are given in Sanskrit text. A Bhashya, a Vyakhya, a Vritti, a Tika, Sangraha or Prakarana. These are the hermeneutical traditional texts. So Prashastapada's text is titled Padartha Dharma Sangraha. And although we call it Prashastapada Bhashya, but technically it is not the Bhashya of Vaisheshika, just as Shankaracharya's Bhashya on Brahma Sutras or Vatsyayana's Bhashya on Nyaya Sutra. Shankara Mishra's Upaskara is the first available commentary which deals with each of the sutras in the traditional hermeneutical style. So up to 15th century, from 4th century BC, we do not find a complete, coherent and traditional commentary of Vaisheshika. There are many reasons why Vaisheshika was not commented upon by traditional scholars. And I kept wondering why Vachaspati Mishra, who is a Sarvatantra Swatantra, he has written commentaries on all the other systems. Actually, he has written two commentaries on Mimamsa Sutra. One on Sutra and the other is Nyaya Kanika, a small commentary. But he has not bothered to write anything on Vaisheshika. So I was just always thinking, what are the reasons why the scholars do not find Vaisheshika interesting? So I could gather there are three reasons. The first one was that Shankara, even before Shankara, the Brahma Sutra itself says, aparigraha chatyanta manapeksha, that the Vedanta Sutras looked upon Kanada as shishta aparigrihita, aparigrahacha atyantam anapeksha. And Shankara explains it that Vaisheshika Radhanto Duryukti Yogat Veda Virodhat Shishta Parigrahacha Na Apekshitavya. So he is refuting Vaisheshika like all other systems, but about Vaisheshika he says, Ayam tu Paramanu Karanavado Na Kaishchidapi Shishtaihi Kenachidapyanshena Parigrihita Ityatyanta Nadaraniyo Vedavadibhiriti. So this is one of the reasons when a scholar like Shankara says something like this. The commentator of Shankara, Vachaspati Mishra, wrote his commentary Bhamati on Brahma Sutra Shankara Bhashya. And he is later to Shankara. Maybe he was influenced by this statement. Next was that the Jainas and the Buddhists had attacked the views of Kanada like anything. And we find ample references in the texts of Jaina philosophy as well as of Buddhism. The third reason is that when the Nyaya and Vaisheshika amalgamated the syncretic school of Nyaya, including the Navya Nyaya later, absorbed all the essentials of Kanada's theory and left it just a residuary. So the name Vaisheshika was lost or sidelined and Nyaya got all the prominence and popularity. So Shankara Mishra, when he writes his commentary, he rightly admits that I do not have any such sutra commentary before me to help me in this task, and therefore it may not receive the approbation of scholars it should have been. And he says, sutra matra valambe, I am just holding this thread of sutra and nothing else. Udayana also mentions in his Kiranavali that Kanada's Vaisheshika was not held in high esteem by some in his days, that is 10th century. And he says the shloka is ati virasam asaram manavarta vihinam pravitata bahu vela prakriya jala dukham udadhi samam atantram tantram etad vadanti. There are some dullheads who declare that this Vaisheshika Shastra is insipid, useless, dreary like the ocean, devoid of any pramanas, shabda and upamana, and enmeshed in describing the steps in formation of binary, etc. And they should be pitied. The Vaisheshika students and scholar should be pitied. Even the statements like the following, added to the above fact, Kanada Shakya Pakhandaihi Trai Dharmo Vilopitaha Tridanda Dharina Purvam Vishnuna Rakshita Trai. So this was another reason that the Vaisheshikas did not ascribe authenticity to Veda in clear terms, as we discussed the other day, in Shabda as Pramana. So they were thought of as Avaidikas, and scholars in those days did not bother to write interpretations or study this Shastra in as high esteem as other traditions of Indian philosophy were being studied. So with this background, it shows that during the time of Shankara Mishra, there was no commentorial tradition on Vaisheshika Sutras available. But what is more astonishing is that until the 50s of the 19th century, 1950s, the Upaskara was the only known commentary on the sutras available to Vaisheshika scholars. Viewed in this background, the five recent commentaries written in Sanskrit in the traditional style deserve a deeper study on part of the students and scholars of Vaisheshika. It is with this intention that I have taken up a study of these five commentaries. I am just giving an outline of the commentaries because I have not studied these in full, but I would like some of my students to work on these commentaries independently because each of these deserve a deeper study. So the first one of these is, and the pity I was mentioning because my thesis is written in Hindi, published, I submitted it in 1982, published in 1992 from Delhi University, and I have listed these five commentaries here. But the scholarly world who is working on this system, recently we have had a publication by none less a scholar than Anantalal Thakur, published from the Center for Studies in Civilization, titled Origin and Development of Vaisheshika System. And it does not list these five commentaries, only one of the commentaries. This is the first one, Rasayanam, which was listed by Matilal in his small treatise, Nyaya Vaisheshika, because it was published in 1977. So maybe he hadn't come across other commentaries, but because this thesis was published in Hindi, so it might not have got attention of the scholars who do not read in Hindi. The first commentary is Rasayanam. This is the first and the foremost among the five commentaries. And I am not giving the details of publication, etc., because they are already given in the handout you have. The commentary is written by Pandit Sri Uttamur Veer Raghavacharya of Madras. And the first edition of it is published from Madras in 1958. The title Rasayana, as it suggests, is a very invigorating tonic for the understanding of Vaisheshika Sutras, as the author himself claims, Shastre traivam idam vidatsu, shaithilyam charuchim harat, vidhatte pushtimishtarthan vaisheshika rasayanam. That is, this rasayana commentary of the Vaisheshika Sutras is a nourishing tonic for those readers who are willing to undertake and comprehend the topics of Vaisheshika. This will, no doubt, remove their complacence and disinterest, as also make them understand the theories of Vaisheshika in real sense of the term. Even a cursory glance at this commentary is enough to prove that this commentary has raised many exegetical and interpretative problems encountered in the Vaisheshika Sutras. I have listed many of them, but I'll not go into the details. I'll just give you a glimpse of what he has done. The methodology adopted in Rasayanam is very scholastic, lucid, as well as traditional. The commentator has delineated in depth for proving the extraordinary nature of Vaisheshika theories by refuting the objections put up by the opponents. The specific contribution of this commentary can be examined at following places, and I am just listing them: causation theory, Samanya, Vishesha and Samavaya, invisibility of air, Anumana and Hetvabhas, proofs for the Atman, theory of atoms, acceptance of Laukika karmas, elucidation of parts of yoga, chemical action in the atoms, Nirvikalpaka perception, Abhava, Shabda and its inclusion in inference, Sukha Dukha, validity of Veda and the theistic arguments. In brief, it may be stated about the significant contribution of Rasayanam in the words of Rasayanakara himself. He says, Vaisheshika rahasyarthaha matantara vilakshanaha sutrair vyutpadya rakshyante shaili shuddhischa darshyate. That is, the secret theories of Vaisheshika are no doubt distinct from other schools of Indian philosophy, and these are being preserved by bringing out from the sutras and also by manifesting some modification in the method adopted for doing so. So I think it's worthwhile to make a deeper and fuller study of this commentary, which is written in a very traditional style. He takes up each word of the sutra and explains it. And moreover, he has given a very lucid and comprehensive introduction in Sanskrit as well as in English to the text which he has written. He has also given a short list of contents and an index of sutras. Each page of the commentary bears the topic being dealt with, and at the end of each annika, annika is the daily lesson. You might be knowing that the sutra texts were written they were divided into adhyayas, chapters, and each chapter usually is divided into annikas. This is one daily lesson that the teacher would be giving. First annika, second annika. So there are 20 annikas in all here. So he has given, at the end of each annika, he has given the topic which has been covered, and then he concludes with a verse in Sanskrit and gives the contents of the annika. All the terms occurring in the sutras, as also the names of Vaisheshika scholars who have been earlier than him, are underlined in the commentary published. So that makes easier for the readers. Next commentary we come to is, this was published Rasayanam in 1958. The next is Vaidika Vritti by Pandit Swami. He was a sannyasi, Hariprasada Shastri. And he has also commented upon Nyaya and Vedanta Sutras. Three of these commentaries have been published, and I have the copies of all of them. Nyaya Sutra Vaidika Vritti, Vedanta Sutra Vaidika Vritti, and Vaisheshika Sutra Vaidika Vritti. And I forgot to mention about Rasayanakara, Uttamura Veera Raghavacharya. He has also written a commentary of Nyaya Bhashya, Nyaya Sutra and Bhashya, Nyaya Bhashya Pradipa. I am not very sure whether it is published or not. He also mentions of another text written by him, which is an exposition of Vaisheshika, Vaisheshika Darshana Vimarsha, which also I have not come across. Maybe it's not published as yet. So we come to the Vedic Vritti, which is published from Niranay Sagar Press, Mumbai, in 1961. So around 47 years have passed and nobody has worked on these commentaries. As the title itself suggests, this comment, and this is published from such a known, well-known press, which was very, very crucial for publishing Sanskrit text, Niranay Sagar Press. The title itself suggests this commentary is based on the Vedas. We do not find any introduction, index of words or sutras like we find in Rasayana. The total number of sutras, according to Pandit Hari Prasad, is 373. It follows the Upaskara for reading of the sutras. The Vaidika Vritti quotes profusely from the Shruti and Smriti, as also from several scholars of earlier Vaisheshika, as well as other schools of Indian philosophy. The author of Vedika Vritti has, just like Rasayanam, summarized the contents of each Annika in a verse, and the following references are worth mentioning here. The first one is that he designates his commentary as a Vedika Vritti. So he wants that Vaisheshika is a school which adheres to Vedika evidences and it shouldn't be titled as Avaidika, which has been the allegation on Vaisheshika. The next view that he expresses is that the color of fire, as stated in Vaisheshika tradition, is illuminating white. Fire is Bhaswara Shukla Rupa, according to the traditional Vaisheshika. Illuminating white. I don't know, they might have been able to see fire in this color, because nowadays we see the fire which is emanating from gas, it is blue in color. And the traditional one fueled by wood was a red or orange in color. But they say Bhaswara Shukla. And the commentator of this particular commentary says that fire is red in color. Next, he says the dimension of manas is medium, while the tradition holds that manas is atomic in size, anu. He says so on the basis of Vedic evidence, while usually the Vaisheshikas hold it to be minute, tadabhavat anu manah. Next, he has equated the Vaisheshika atoms with the gunas of Sankhya, as also with the Lohita Shukla or Krishna of Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Then he has explained the concept of moksha on the basis of Vedic view as an enjoyment of eternal bliss. And this has been an allegation on the Vaisheshika, that their concept of moksha is just like a stone, where no sukha and no dukha is possible. But he says it is an enjoyment of eternal bliss. In brief, the Vedic Vritti, as its title suggests, has tried to interpret the Vaisheshika theories in accordance with the Vedic evidences, and he says, Kanadena praniteyam artha gyanodaka prapa maya hariprasadena vritya samyak parishkrita. I am revising whatever Kanada had said in accordance with the Vedic references. The third one is Brahma Muni Bhashyam. As the title is evident, the writer of this commentary is Brahma Muni. This commentary is denoted as number 58 in the writings of Brahma Muni. That means he had already published 57 titles and this was his 58th work. The commentary follows Upaskara for the reading of sutras and gives the number of sutras as 373. Before the beginning of commentary, a list of main topics is given and the sutras have also been classified accordingly, which will be very useful for any reader of this commentary. Thereafter, a list of contents as per the sutras is given, and then the list of such sutras is given wherein a critique of other scholars and their views is made. So he has classified the sutras on the basis of topics, on the basis of contents, and also on the basis of refutations by other scholars. Last but not the least, An alphabetical list of the sutras is also provided. Obviously, this commentary would be quite useful for any serious researcher in the field of Vaisheshika system. According to Brahma Muni, all the philosophical schools, this is a very strange view he has expressed, all the schools of Indian philosophy are contemporaneous. Not only that, they have all appeared simultaneously with the Vedas, since they are the subsidiaries of Veda. They are the Upangas. As the tradition holds, Veda is the Mula, Shruti, and the Angas. There are six subsidiaries of Vedic studies, and they are Shiksha, Kalpa, Vyakarana, Nirukta, Chanda, and Jyotisha. These are the Angas of Veda. And these six orthodox systems of Hindu philosophy, they are the Upangas of Veda. So he says that the seeds for these theories were all available in the Vedas. Further, the name Vaisheshika signifies one of the three types of causes according to him. He explains the Nimitta Karana as Visheshaka, Vishesha. So Vishesha is Nimitta Karana. And he quotes the sutra Agner Vaisheshikam from Vaisheshika Sutra. This is 10.2.7 and he explains that here the Vishesha Karana of Agni is given. That's why Vishesha signifies Nimitta Karana. Abhyudaya, according to him, signifies worldly prosperity and not Tattva Jnana or Swarga as has been interpreted by Shankara Mishra. According to Shankara Mishra, Abhyudaya Tattva Jnanam Nishrayasam Labhyam Tattva Jnanat iti. Tattva Jnana is the means to Nishrayasa. Abhyudaya is Tattva Jnana, that means Abhyudaya is the means to Nishrayasa. But according to Brahma Muni, Abhyudaya is worldly prosperity and Nishrayasa is the ultimate goal or the spiritual exaltation. The Vedic Vritti also is, now I come to the commentator of earlier interpreters, commentaries of earlier interpreters like Shankara Mishra, Jayanarayana and Chandrakanta have not only been examined by Brahma Muni, but he has also demonstrated inadequacies in their interpretation of Vaisheshika Sutra. So this is another contribution of this commentary. The next fourth one is very interesting. It is titled as Veda Bhaskara Bhashyam. And it is written by a scholar of physical science. He is not a Sanskritist. The author of this commentary is Pandit Kashinath Sharma. And one thing more we should note, Brahma Muni Bhashyam is published from Baroda. Vedic Vritti is published from Mumbai, Nirnay Sagar. Rasayana Bhashyam is published from Madras. And this Veda Bhaskara Bhashyam is published from Himachal. So all over India, there is a renewed interest in the last century in this system of Indian philosophy. And why it is so, I will come to that point in my conclusion. The author of this commentary is Pandit Kashinath Sharma, who has tried to give a novel interpretation of the Vaisheshika system based on the modern physical science. That is why that at many places this may not be acceptable to the traditional Sanskrit scholars, but the effort is worthwhile, no doubt. There is a detailed English introduction in the book where the significance and background of the theories of Vaisheshika as well as physical science have been expounded. The prominent places or points in this commentary which are worth examining: the first word occurring in the Vaisheshika Sutras, that is atha. Athato dharmam vyakhyasyamah. So usually and traditionally the term atha is interpreted as auspicious. Atha mangalavachi shabdah. It is not auspicious according to Pandit Kashinath Sharma because obviously he is a scientist. He doesn't believe in such tradition. He says it is not auspicious. And it's not also invocatory, as has been shown by the traditional interpreters. The perception modified or assisted with the help of devices like lens or telescope is also ordinary perception according to Sharma. this question was not present before the traditional interpreters because there were no devices like telescopes or lenses. But nowadays, when you perceive the atoms with the help of a telescope or a microscope, it might be asked, is it usual perception? So he says that this is also part of the usual perception acceptable to Vaisheshikas. And the term Vishesha, according to him, is physical element. And Vaisheshika is physical science. This is how he has interpreted. Abhava, according to him, is not an independent category, can be subsumed under the property Buddhi or Jnana. Adrishta, according to him, is Daiva, and Dharma is Bhagya in this commentary. He says, and he also gives scientific equivalents of these two terms. Adrishta is extrinsic energy and Dharma is intrinsic energy. So these are two types of energy in physical science. Adrishta is physical energy in the external sense and Dharma is the internal energy. Vaisheshika is theistic according to him, as has been held by several later commentators also. So the Veda Bhaskara Bhashya is also an unconventional and a novel exercise in the interpretation of Vaisheshika Sutras. Now we come to the last one, Sugama Vritti. The title itself suggests it is very simple, Sugama. This commentary was written by D.T. Tathacharya Shiromani, edited by Sri Ranganathacharya after the death of the author and published from Ganganath Jha, Kendriya Sanskrit Vidyapeeth, Allahabad. The editor has brought out the significance of this commentary in his introductory note. The author himself has also given an introduction in Sanskrit, wherein he has demonstrated the significance of the system and has given a brief overview of the sutra text as well as the main topics being covered in the text. A list of contents written in Sanskrit provides the strict-wise details of each annika of the sutras. The commentator has first agreed to the allegation put up by the opponents and referred to by none other than Udayana himself, which I quoted earlier, that the text of Vaisheshika Sutras is not very systematic. There are lots of repetitions, redundancies, and incoherencies. But he has also claimed that it can be made very cogent text, a systematic one, and he has tried to rearrange the sutras according to his claim. This is precisely what he has tried to achieve. The style of this commentary is very lucid and not at all scholastic. Nevertheless, the author has succeeded in bringing out the inherent relation and order contained in the sutras. To achieve this, he has first provided an anvaya of the terms used in a particular sutra, then he breaks the compound words and finally gives the meaning of each of the words. That's why he has titled his commentary as Vritti. Some of them are Bhashya, other is Vyakhya, but this is a Vritti. At the end of the first annika, a technique for ascertaining the topics being discussed is given, which is really very useful. Either the subtitles such as Avasitam Vayu Prakaranam. After the topic being discussed is complete, he gives a subtitle Avasitam Vayu Prakaranam or Avasitam Dik Prakaranam. Such subtitles are provided at the end of each topic at several places or somewhere there is a prior mention of the topic being covered in the following sutras. In brief, the commentator has succeeded in his aim, which he had outlined at the very beginning of his work as follows, Yepi Sukumara Matayas Tepi Aklesham Kanadasutranam Bhavam Buddhyantam Iti Vritti Mimam Vitanumaha Sugamam. So he is writing this commentary for those who are elementary scholars in the field of Vaisheshika, and they might understand the import of the sutras without much effort. That is what he has aimed at. What follows from the above brief outline of the five Sanskrit commentaries on Vaisheshika Sutras written and published in the last century? From 1961, they are being published at regular some interval, 10 years or 15 years like that. The fact is that the system of Vaisheshika might have been neglected by the traditional interpreters or commentators in ancient times, as has been reflected in the introductory note which I just presented. But there is a renewed interest in Vaisheshika, which is reflected in these five commentaries published in the last century, and it presents a very commonsensical and individualistic worldview which appeals to the modern rationalistic mindset. That is why the modern mind is returning back to the system of Vaisheshika. There is a blend of tradition as well as innovation in these five commentaries, as we could just briefly demonstrate. Moreover, it also proves another point, that the tradition of writing Shastric texts in Sanskrit is still continuing, and Sanskrit is not just an ancient classical language which needs to be read and commented in other modern languages, or at best a medium for writing some literary works. A mere sketchy introduction of the above five Sanskrit commentaries is enough to show that neither the serious study of ancient philosophical texts nor the language being used as medium for this is outdated. It is only that there are a much lesser number of people who are committed to such studies, but those who have ventured on this path are really worthy of our sincere gratitude to them. And I would like to conclude with a statement of Matilal, who himself was a great scholar of Nyaya Vaisheshika. The history of Nyaya Vaisheshika thus forms a very important component of the cultural history of India. This tradition, along with a few others, shows clearly that Indian philosophical literature did not always deal exclusively with idealism, monism, subjectivity, or mysticism. The Nyaya Vaisheshika writers were instead critical and positive thinkers, genuinely interested in logic, analysis of human knowledge and language, and descriptive metaphysics. Existence of these thoughts in classical and medieval India in particular proved to be a proper antidote to the prevalent world-negating attitude of some forms of Vedanta and Buddhism, and I unquote. And I am glad that two of the living Nyaya Vaisheshika scholars, Dr. Janardhan Ganeri and Dr. John Vatanki, are here. I pay my homage to these living scholars of Nyaya who are interested in this field of Vaisheshika, of which I am also an ordinary student. I conclude my presentation. Namaha Purvebhya, Namaha Pathikrutbhya. Dhanyavad. Because I want that some discussion, some meaningful discussion should take place.
I'll start. On the one hand, it seems like you have a scientific type commentary on the Vaisheshika, which is to claim it for a scientific, contemporary scientific worldview, as it were. Are the other commentaries, do they read the text in the light of contemporary Western philosophical concerns, or are they very traditional in their...
I don't think any one of them deals with the Western concept as such, because the two of them, as Vaidika Vritti and the other one, Brahma Muni Bhashyam. In fact, Brahma Muni Bhashyam goes back to the Veda in a very dogmatic style, while the Vaidika Vritti gives evidence, textual evidence, to prove whatever he has to say. So, Veda Bhaskara Bhashyam is scientific in its orientation, but the problem is that the Sanskrit scholars would not accept it as a traditional commentary at all, because he is going with some very, very revolutionary translations of terms like Vishesha as physical energy or physical element, which will not be acceptable to the traditional scholars of Vaisheshika. But some scholars have to make a study, a deeper and greater study, fuller study of these commentaries before we can come to any conclusion. This is just a sketch which I presented.
Who is the audience for the commentaries then?
For the commentaries?
Is it like a contemporary sort of university philosophy department audience?
Yeah, they are not teaching these modern commentaries, but they are teaching the Prashastapada Bhashya. Some of them are teaching Upaskara. But I think the time has come, then we need to blend this innovative technique and style with the traditional one. And maybe at our university we have great freedom in choosing the text. So whenever some students are interested, I would be interested in teaching any of these commentaries, because we are not bound by such rules that we cannot teach anything. Suppose I am working on this paper to elaborate it and substantiate, so maybe I'll take up one after other commentary for teaching the Vaisheshika system. And that would be in. And out of all these, I think the Rasayanam by Pandit Uttamur Veera Raghavacharya is the most scholastic, lucid and authentic commentary.
You see the same one who has a summary of Nyayakusumanjali.
Yeah, he is the same. Are you aware, has his Nyaya Bhashya Pradipa been published? No. So even I don't know. But as I said, the interest in Vaisheshika is growing now. And we have these scholars like Erich Frau Wallner, who wrote this History of Indian Philosophy, and he devoted a full volume to Vaisheshika. And he termed it as naturalistic philosophical tradition. Then we have the publication by Wilhelm Halbfass on Being and What There Is. A very authentic and a very substantial work. So interest is growing. In fact, interest was there for Nyaya more rather than Vaisheshika. But now people have started working on this, and maybe sometime future we may derive, there may be many of the manuscripts. Recently I asked my students to explore the manuscripts in this tradition. People don't want to go that deeper and work that hard. Actually they are busy studying Tarka Sangraha or Nyaya Siddhanta Muktavali for that matter. Tarka Sangraha itself has more than 30 commentaries. But the student whom I asked to, if he wants to work with me, I said, you go and search for a manuscript, only then I'll register with you. He went to Rajasthan, I was telling you, and he brought a manuscript of a commentary which is not yet published. So there may be many more commentaries of the dark period. We don't have any textual evidence. Why was this dark period for 1,000 years? Nothing was written on Vaisheshika while there were writings and texts on other schools. So what was the reason? Why Kanada was named as Uluka? And why such things? And there are many texts available in Chinese tradition. Dashapadarthi of Matichandra, which was available in Chinese, has been rendered in English by Hakuju Ui, and it has been published. So maybe many more texts are available in China and Japan.
One of the things about the Vaisheshika is that precisely because it's more systematic, it's trying to give a naturalistic explanation of the world. And so issues of textuality aren't so important.
Yeah.
And, of course, the tradition of thinking in the Vaisheshika system continued, if not in the form of commentaries on the Vaisheshika Sutras, but in many original works.
Yeah, that's...
Karanavali, Karanavali Prakasha, most particularly the works of Shiromani.
Yeah, Raghunatha Shiromani.
Vedanta, that's when they were opening them. It was a very flexible way of a system which could be easily adapted to new problems. Yeah. I mean, Raghunatha started to talk about swatva and endless new categories.
Yeah, and he rejected some of the traditional ones and he proposed some. So you are right that from the very beginning, Vaisheshika was very flexible and rational in its outlook.
And so what intrigues me is that suddenly in the 20th century we've got people writing commentaries on the sutra texts and reintroducing all these questions about textuality and hermeneutical problems. I wonder why you thought that, what might have motivated that, why they prefer to do that rather than writing about named after Nirupanam or something like that.
Yeah, there are fewer writings on Padartha because of this Navya-Nyaya style of those texts. I think that is very, very complicated, and ordinary people who are not trained into that tradition, they would not like to write on them. But there was this interest on Padartha. Once it was published, Prashasta Pada's Padartha Dharma Sangra, it became the central text of Vaisheshika. And the sutras were in the background. So all the commentaries that were written in this period, the medieval period, they were all on Padartha Dharma Sangraha or the commentaries on these Kiranavali. We have many commentaries on Kiranavali itself, isn't it?
And because Prashastapada grouped together the sutras on a particular topic.
He gave a novel interpretation of the Vaisheshika, although he is not alluding to sutras in the traditional Bhashya style.
Well, what he did was to collect together all the sutras on Atman, for example,
and he
discussed them in a
rearranged
place.
Them according to the topics, and also he added many new concepts in the system. For example, the concept of Ishvara and these Srishti and Pralaya, it was not there in Kanada Sutras. So many of the new interpretations, and also this chemical action of atom, that was not in Kanada Sutras. So maybe just to make themselves, and again back going back to the tradition, that is what invigorates people and motivates them to write commentaries on the sutras. And because the sutras are very, very unsystematic in their final redaction, so people are not able to understand what is the actual import of these sutras. So, but the scholars like Veer Raghavacharya, he has done an excellent job. He's tried to relate the sutras to the topics being discussed, and he has tried to show out that there is a system even in this presently available redaction of the sutras.
So is the thought then that the whole tradition of reinterpretation of Vaisheshika through Prashastapada and Udayana and Abhinayakas somehow misses out something? By going back to the original sutras, we can discover something that they didn't.
I think so. That has to be done. One can't conclude at this stage. But there are some links and some suggestions that Prashastapada was not actually following the tradition of the sutras. Especially the introduction of Maheshwara, isn't it? And one doesn't actually know. Maybe there was this connection which we are not aware, because the middle texts are not available. Between Sutra and Prashastapada, we don't have anything. So whatever is available, if you read the Sutras and if you read the Bhashya of Prashastapada, there are many incoherencies. There are many things which were not in the Sutras and are available in Prashastapada. And similarly, many things in the sutras which are not available in Prashastapada. He has contributed a lot to the tradition, no doubt. But the link has to be established. So maybe that motivated some scholars to go back to the sutras. And that is what Shankara Mishra did. In fact, Shankara Mishra must be credited. He was the first one in 15th century to go back to the sutras. And that happened in case of Nyaya also. Vishwanatha wrote a Gautamiya Sutra Vivriti, isn't it? On the sutras. On the one hand, he wrote Bhasha Paricheda and Muktavali. But on the other hand, so that was the time, 15th century, I suppose, when there was a need to go back to, when this Navya-Nyaya style and technique overtook the scene of philosophical discussion. Maybe people wanted to go back to the original and bring out the essence of the sutras. Maybe. Because both of them are writing at the same period, 15th century. Vishwanatha Panchanana and Shankara Mishra. Both of them are well-versed in Navya-Nyaya. They have written texts on Navya-Nyaya as well. Shankara Mishra wrote a Kanada Rahasya separately, which is perfectly in style of Navya-Nyaya. But here he is writing commentary on the sutras. But for Shankara Mishra, he might have lost this sutra number, sequence, and
Why again why you think that these two things were happening simultaneously, the ever more advanced Navya-Nyaya techniques, but at the same time writing the desire to write commentaries directly on the sutras.
As I said, maybe because of this Navya-Nyaya style and the scholastics taking over the philosophical scene, they wanted to go back to the essence of these metaphysical essence. because the linguistic discussion was somehow missing that metaphysical essence.
It was a reaction to...
Yeah, maybe. That always happens, isn't it? Because in Hindu tradition, the concept of time, as you know, is cyclical. So everything turns back. So once the sutras were there, they were studied with interest, then they lose interest, something new is emerging due to the internal and external struggle with other traditions like Buddhism and Jainism, and also the internal struggle with Mimamsa and Vedanta. But then there is a renewed interest going back to the original and again bringing the essence of that tradition.
Presumably one difference between, say, the 20th century commentaries and the early one would be that the 20th century ones have an idea of knowledge as progressing, as somehow developing, whereas the earlier commentaries would be interested in recovering a kind of knowledge or wisdom which is implicit within the text already there. So would that be one of the features of these more recent commentaries? Would be the idea of actually looking at or developing ideas that are only implicit within the text but actually can be advanced because we have more knowledge now?
Yeah, that's what precisely two of the commentaries are doing. So they are not as much concerned with the old or the ancient techniques. They want to write it in a more subjective manner. Whatever ideas they are gaining in modern science, they are trying to correlate it with the system of Vaisheshika. So I think every age or every commentator, that is what he is referring to, all these commentators of Prashastapada. In Sanskrit tradition, the commentators, although they allude themselves to the tradition, but they give so many novel interpretations and they develop the system. So these commentaries also in some way, like this one statement, that the perception made with the help of devices like telescope or a lens is also a perception, a sensual perception, that's a great idea. And many more ideas like this, because they are occurring in modern time, they were not available. For example, this chemical action of atoms that we discuss. According to them, the amount of heat or energy they could have generated was limited. Isn't it? Now we have furnaces which can go up to any amount of heat. So these ideas have to be incorporated and related with the original system. Because for them, the Parker was possible because for them, heat was only up to this level or this point. They couldn't generate much more heat than this. But nowadays, the atoms would burn or not, that has to be tested. This chemotherapy, which is done in this cancer treatment, they just burn the atoms or the cells, isn't it? So they are dying out the cells, or according to Vaisheshika, they never die out. They can only be burnt and some properties of them would change. That is the theory. So this molecular medicine theory and the chemical action theory of Vaisheshika has to be re-examined in the modern sense of the term. I'm not very sure whether this chemotherapy burns the atoms or just the properties of the atoms. According to Vaisheshika, only the properties would change. But the atom itself is indestructible. So if that is so, then this treatment would not work, actually.
Are there any comments from the other scientists, physical scientists, on this scientific interpretation of this Vaisheshika system?
I'm not aware. Maybe.
It's, you know, it's just ignored, I think, this scientific interpretation.
Yeah, they should be examined.
Examined by equally competent scientists.
Yeah.
Because some of the claims which you made, which the Indians early science made, it may have some foundations.
In fact, there is another book written in Sanskrit that is written from a mathematician. He is Vaisheshika Siddhantanam Ganitiya Paddhatya Vimarsha. He is Narayan Gopal Dongre from Pune. So he has also proved on the basis of mathematical equations this concept of number in Vaisheshika and how it works.
What is his conclusion?
He has tried to show various theories of Vaisheshika to explain in the light of modern mathematical style.
Raise an issue though of what the purpose of finding out about matter is.
Please
think about Abhidhamma. The purpose is not to find out that the universe, say, has atoms in dynamism, but to arouse that perception, to actually arouse that perception in oneself. So that would it kind of be a sidetrack, an interesting sidetrack, but a sidetrack nonetheless, to try and verify through scientific, inverted commas, observation what is intended primarily as a meditative or instigative tool? I don't know, because I don't know where the Vaisheshika
gives much prominence to observation, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's through observation that they are reaching it, but they do not deny the role of meditation as well. Observation is very important, but it has to be complemented with meditation.
Two points over here. The first one is quite reactionary. Should we actually take a text which was written as observation for that period with their given knowledge and then try to see whether it is valid today? One can look at it whether it is valid in certain headings, but trying to look at it in detail might end up invalidating that text itself, which would be unfair because it was valid for that given period. So are we doing the right thing, trying to invalidate it either knowingly or unknowingly? And the second thing is that a lot of science today, when you look at the word pratyaksha, direct perception, it is not direct perception. It's indirect, and it actually comes under anumana, because you have to have a lot of inference made, especially whether you use a telescope regarding today's cosmology science. A lot of it is done by the process of anumana, and hence we will know that even what was written in the 1970 is invalid, even though it appears to be novel and new science becomes invalid today. You put like the magnetic resonance, the imaging, what we call as a functional imaging. It's a lot of it is inference because it is computer analyzed and then a picture is generated. So it is never a direct perception. It's an inferred knowledge. And I just was giving a little bit of worry about trying to take an ancient text which was based on direct perception, and now we've come to a level we are taking inference to a new dimension.
Yeah, I agree to that point. Even they were aware of this fact, because when Karnada talks of pratyaksha, he also talks of arsham siddha darshanam. The ordinary perception that we have is different than what these seers who had the direct perception. And our perception has two stages. The first stage is nirvikalpaka. That is direct, I think. And what you mean by inference would be the savikalpaka pratyaksha, where many things have to be added from our prior experience. So to that point, you may call it anumana, but we would not like to call it anumana, but we would agree to this, that there are some shades of our prior experience as long as it is savikalpaka. The nirvikalpaka is, that's why the Buddhists don't accept savikalpaka at all. They say that only nirvikalpaka pratyaksha is direct perception. That is the immediate one. All other perceptions are mediate ones. One more point. What you call perception is a blend of anumana is in it. Similarly, anumana cannot be pure anumana. It has to have some portion of pratyaksha. And there are two theories regarding it in Nyaya and Buddhism. One of them is Pramana Vyavastha, which is acceptable to the Buddhists, and one of them is Pramana Samplava, which is for the Nayayikas. Any object which we perceive, although I am looking at it visually, but I can also know it through inference. So all the Pramanas can work for knowing a particular object. That is the theory of Nyaya. So when we perceive, we do not deny the role of Anumana. But according to Buddhists, there is a restriction. Svalakshana can only be perceived, and all other experiences are to be inferred. So two types of objects and two types of means, for them, whatever is perceptible is not to be inferred. And whatever is inferred can never be perceived. So they agree to that Pramana Vyavastha, and we are open to all our commonsensical observations, experiences, and reinterpretations. The second point that you raise, that these are commentaries. So they are not trying to invalidate the original. If they had to do that, they would have written a critique. Like in the tradition itself, Raghunatha Shiromani has, on the one hand, he ascribes himself to be a Durdharsha Nayayika. I am a Nayayika, but I question these points. He has questioned, he has doubted. In fact, he has gone up to the extent that atoms, according to Nyaya Vaisheshika, are perceptible to the yogins. And he says, let the yogins take a shapatha, a pledge, and say that they can perceive the atoms. Te yoginah sa shapatham prichyantam. Let them say that they can. I don't believe that the yogins can perceive. So the questioning was there, reinterpretation was there, but these are the commentaries. So I don't feel that they are trying to invalidate. Rather, they are aiming to revalidate whatever was implicit. Because a sutra is a very cryptic statement. You see, it doesn't explicitly say what is it trying to convey. So anybody who is trying to interpret the sutra can bring in his own beliefs, his knowledge, or his own explanation. So this style itself gives scope for reinterpretation. So I don't think they are trying to invalidate, they are trying to revalidate it with modern knowledge, whatever is available to them.
No, I was saying that if they may end up invalidating.
Yeah. They may, yeah. Yeah, that is true. So your worry, I share your worry, that's it. But for that, we have to study, re-examine, and then we may conclude something. Yeah, please.
One thing, you know, you were saying that there wasn't so much written on Vaisheshika during the past 1,000 years. But I was just curious that it seems as though some other texts, like the Puranas and things, were, even though they're rejecting its sort of its conclusions, but they're using Vaisheshika ideas in their own texts. Like I've been studying the Bhagavata recently, and in that they reject Vaisheshika as a system of knowledge, but then they use Paramanubhava and talk about atoms, and then on top of that they try to calculate time based on the atom. So I was just curious, it seems as though maybe some of the other darshanas, like Vedanta and the other, because they used Vaisheshika systems and sort of their methodology.
Yeah, but my assertion was that other schools were referring to it. That's why we find the names and references to these. But nobody was coming to the rescue of Vaisheshika at that given time. In the later period, when there was a struggle between Buddhism, Nyaya and Vaisheshika, so both sides were very active. The Buddhist scholars were saying some Dignagas Pramana Samuchaya, for example, refers to Vaisheshika theories and refutes them profusely. But there were scholars like Udyotakara and Udayana to answer them. But in the earlier period, there was none on the side of Vaisheshika. That's what I meant.
Well, thanks very much. I think we should conclude this morning's lecture. Thank you so much for
Thanks to everybody. Thank you.